Hi, and welcome to another episode of China on the Rocks, a podcast where my awesome co-host...
Hi guys, Anna here.
...and I talk about everything that happens in the China F&B industry. I am Logan, and we are here. And what are we drinking today, Anna?
Today we're going back to the classics. We're doing the bartender handshake. We're having some Fernet.
Woohoo!
Cheers.
So, we're drinking Fernet Branca today. Why are we drinking Fernet Branca today? What's our topic of discussion?
Today we're going to talk about, regardless what's good, what's bad, what's trendy, what do we really like? Yeah. And I have a question for you, Logan. Do you like Fernet?
Okay, so here's the funny thing about Fernet Branca and me. I was the first person that had a Fernet coin in China, probably one of the first Fernet Branca drinkers. I picked it up drinking Fernet Branca in San Francisco.
Do you remember the year?
Yeah, 2010. Oh, okay. 2015 when I got the coin.
My coin is 2014, but I wasn't in China.
Yeah, nerd. No, just joking. What I will say is that Fernet Branca has always been a bartender handshake, and I think I appreciate it. I have a love affair with it. It's not my main bitch. It's my side bitch.
Okay, I'm going to be very honest. I do not like it.
Yeah.
I do not like it. I think it's nasty, guys. I'm sorry. I think that I would say, like, kudos to Fernet for doing a great marketing campaign. I think that they are really smart. They are, nowadays it's more, but back in the day, they were one of the first brands to really go for bartender culture and try to assimilate themselves with bartenders. So they made these campaigns of the handshake. In the beginning, for the guys at home that don't know, Fernet created this coin that basically, if you were a bartender, you could gain from them. They'll give you a coin. And when it was a day off and you go to another bar, you put your coin on the table. If the bartender also had a coin and he put his coin on the table, you bought the round of shots.
Yeah, it's a challenge
Fernet
coin, yes.
But if they didn't put their coin back on the table, then they had to buy you a shot of Fernet. So the idea was that it incentivizes us to drink on the days off, as in Fernet, and it really worked in the beginning. I remember when I got my first coin, and I was like going to bars, of course, still having a beer or a cocktail, but I would slap it on the table, and somebody's like, oh, I don't have mine here, and then just give me a shot. And I used to go all night and have shots of Fernet everywhere.
So, as we've discussed on the podcast, I'm a bartender from San Francisco. There was a lady there when I worked there called Carol Ann Lynch. And she basically is the godmother of drinking Fernet for bartenders. So back in the day, Fernet looks like an espresso if you've never had one before. But it's a dark colored liquid, kind of like Jägermeister without the sugar. I'm seeing Anna's face as she quivers in disgust right now.
It's just really bitter, but it also has, it's made with saffron.
Yeah, it's the biggest, so it's the saffron, myrrh, and what's the other thing?
There's
three things to it.
But basically, it's not really mint. They have a version with mint called Fernet Menta. But it's not really mint, but it has that kind of fresh toothpaste feeling to it. And it's really bitter.
Yeah, it's very bitter. It's an Amaro. It's good for your stomach. So let's start from the start and work our way to the end. Fernet Branca is started by two different people. Dr. Branca and a guy named something Fernet. One of them obviously was a doctor that did intestinal stomach work. They were both in Italy, and they wanted to make a stomach cure.
For real? Two people?
Yeah.
I had no idea about
that. Fernet Branca. So you'll see other Frenets in this world. There's Fernet Hunter. There's a different bunch of Frenets. Frenet being now a type of alcohol. But Fernet Branca is the one that we have in focus today.
So to go even back, it's a very traditional in many European countries, but in Italy especially, to after having meal, to have something called a digestive. And in Italy, it's regional, so every region has a different type. They have a name. So if you go near, like, the Roman area, you have, like, ratafia. If you go to, like, the south, you have Cinar, you have Averna, you have all these different digestives they're done. And Fernet Branca is from Milan, so it's, like, a northern Italian one. And it's meant to be good for your stomach after a heavy meal. I think to the level the bartenders are taking it, it's no longer good for your stomach.
I mean, at this level, no. But what the whole thing was is to loosen your stomach up after a meal. what became popular in San Francisco was Fernet was a lot like Galliano in terms of nobody was ordering it at the bar. So the bartenders would just drink it because nobody was checking. And I know those bartenders, and
nobody was checking it.
Nobody was checking it. So you'd have it in an espresso glass or a coffee cup. And people were like, oh, you having a cup of coffee? And you're like, yes, ciao bella.
It's funny, too, because became just a cultural like part of the zeitgeist of bartending. So anywhere in the world, even in a small town in China, they will still cheer you with Fernet. And yeah.
So yeah. Fernet is the bartender's handshake. And what do you got obscure? What alcohols are you drinking that, you know, deserve a mention on our podcast?
I have a shot recipe deserve a mention. I don't know who created it. I don't know where it comes from. I heard through the zeitgeist became a thing. It's called a Ferrari.
Yes.
Have you had it?
I've had Ferraris before.
So it's
Campari.
And Fernet.
And Fernet, right?
Yeah, because Rari. Yeah. Ferrari. And it's funny because you think Campari is bitter. Fernet's bitter. But when you actually layer them, you do like 50-50 of each. Mm-hmm. It tastes quite pleasant and much more pleasant than just a shot of Campari or just a shot of Fernet. You like smooth everything out. It's just like those two bitters cancel each other out. And then the sugar adds. I don't know. It just works so much better.
Have you ever had a... There's another shot called the Bartender's Indecision.
Uh-oh.
It's Jameson and Fernet layered.
I have not, but that sounds horrible.
Oh, it's horribly good.
Horribly good. There's also a black Ferrari, which is espresso, Campari, and Fernet.
Yes.
And that's good.
That sounds like it'd be more bitter, to be
no,
honest with you.
No, actually, it's very sweet.
Really? Oh, I guess.
Again, no, there's something about like when all these bitters are together, they cancel each other out. And suddenly they just become, you only got like the sweetness of all these things. But yeah, no, it's a good shot. So say that. I think I'm more of a purist when it comes to drink outside of this. I'm not big into the liqueurs or the herbal stuff. I drink tequila. I drink mezcal.
Tequila and mezcal are fantastic. I mean, I'm not going to go wrong ever with tequila. But like, what's your other like esoteric, obscure bartendery kind of liquors? Like when somebody asks you, oh, tell me about this, and you're like, oh, let me enlighten you, my friend, and you pull up your elbows to the bar and you lean in and you give them our classic Logan and Anna bartender stare.
I think I am good question. I think I'm really picky about vermouths.
Really? Okay, fair enough. Let's get into it.
I think a lot of people think a martini, any vermouth will go, and I don't know, Negroni, any...
Let's break down vermouth first, though. No. Vermouth is wormwood.
Well, it's fortified wine, right? So it's wine that's added some spirits to make the alcohol go a little higher, and then they add a lot of herbs as well.
I'm just saying the name vermouth, it literally translates to basically wormwood.
Oh, I did not know that. I guess, yeah, makes sense. I guess you're back on these roots. I'm thinking more of the like technically nerdy flavor of things. I am.
That's why we're a team. Technically nerdy. I'm just technically nerdy.
No, because I think that to simplify, I think that the vermouth makes a bigger difference in a martini than the gin itself.
Fair. 100%.
Yeah. As long as, of course, unless you have a crazy gin, crazy stuff, crazy new world gin. But if you're talking about just you get any London dry style gin, what really is going to make a difference is the vermouth.
Yes.
So over the years, I became really, really picky. So I only ordered like very specific brands for very specific drinks. And of course, in China, drinks with vermouth don't go as fast. And maybe in Hong Kong or in the US or in Europe. So here, I didn't have a massive stock. I just got like the top three must have for me.
Which are?
For sweet vermouth, I like Cocchi Torino.
Oh my God, so good.
So it's Torino is a region, and like it's a style of vermouth as well, and all the vermouths from Torino are a little creamier, for like a better word. They're like thicker, they're richer. They also both sweeter and more bitter at the same time. They're almost an amaro. They're almost like a bitter, and I just think it goes great in a Negroni and goes great in a Manhattan. It's just gives all the depth that you need. For dry vermouth, my favorite is Noilly Pratt.
Oh, yeah.
Extra dry, but you can't get that in China. So for the argument that I'll have of many people here, there are many, many, many fancy vermouths here from all sorts of obscure little brands. But my favorite here is Dolin. Dolan extra dry. Yeah. Just, again, I would prefer gnarly Pret. You can't get it here. So Dolan goes. Mancino Seco is also great for martinis specifically. Okay. Has almost like an olivey flavor to it. For a wet vermouth, so like a semi-dry, then you open the world for many other things that I like too. So we have like the cocky Americano style, which I really like. The Mancino is also good.
What's the really good red vermouth though? Like the
there's like Carpano Antica and all those. That's so good. I don't like Carpano Antica that much. I think it's a bit too.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, look, don't get me wrong. It's good, but I think the cocky Torino is so far superior. In the sense of they are both like this older style, which is a little more herbal and a little more like sweeter, a little more rich. I still think that like Cocky Torino is like up there.
I just feel like the presentation from I can't even think of the word. Say the name again. Siri me.
Cocky?
No, not cocky, the other one.
Carpano Antica. Carpano,
yeah. Antica, I think the presentation level is fantastic on that. I feel like you have quality. Like the bottle, everything, the performance of it is on par, and you look a little bit more professional when you have it.
Just because it has the wax stop on it.
It has the wax stop, but like, you know, you want a perception of value. I think that's a very important thing in our industry. And when you get that kind of stuff, it makes it more like the customers are happy.
I feel like Cocky Torino looks really nice too.
It does look really nice. Like if you haven't seen the bottles, folks listening at home, it's just beautiful. Like it almost looks like what? Like a flag, right?
Yeah, it has this old, how do you call that? Like a crest?
Yeah.
Kind of style. Like it looks almost like a bottle of Bordeaux, a bottle of like fancy wine. The branding is great.
It's
love
like
the liquid.
60s iconic looking branding, right? Because it says Cokey like really boldly.
Oh, so those are for the other lines, for the regular vermouths. For the Torino, they do a classic. So it's a classic bottle. Yeah, it looks more like an old bottle of wine. The other ones have a really like retro 60s, 70s like poppy image on it, but it's a bit different. I just like this stuff. I like them. I like how they produce it. I like how much they care. I think I'm really, that's my nerdiness is like, I think I like my vermouth. What is your slogan?
I like Formula Antica. I mean, I will go lowbrow and do like Martini Rosso.
I refuse. I have only like, I'll go lowbrow and get like Cinzano or something. I don't know. Or even the cheap level of Carpanos or... Come on, Dolan is so affordable. I think my problem with Martini, the brand Martini Vermouth.
But Martini Rosso comes to the party. It's the bubbly. That was the coolest ad.
I think my problem is that back in the day, sure, they kind of opened the world for how easy and affordable and again, easy to get vermouth. So I respect them for what they've done. I don't feel like they've done anything to innovate themselves the last like 30 years. I don't think there's anything like... new or improved from there in the sense of like quality. And now there are a lot of brands that are just as cheap and just like, you know, as available. So I think if you can get Dolan for like the same price.
Now, like, what do you think about people that make their own vermouths?
I think that when you make your own vermouth, which is very traditional for Spain or even like some parts of Italy, it's more for drinking straight. So if you go to Spain, the vermouth, they call right. It's basically something that they'll drink after a meal on ice with a nice slice of orange and an olive to give a little bit of saltiness. And you drink it like that. And I think if you make your own like that, it's delicious. I think it's hard to get like the right recipe in order to make, let's say, a good Negroni with it or a good...
Fair, yeah, because sometimes it'll be overpowered.
Also, a lot of the times they have to be aged to mellow them out as well. They have to be like kept... differently. So I think I think I go for it, make your own vermouth, but most likely it's going to be like drinking on the rocks or with some soda. I don't know if you're going to be able at home to make something comparable for like a dry martini.
Now, just speaking of, because when you said olives, that struck me as something very interesting. Aperol spritzes, what's the garnish?
I like orange slices and olives.
Yeah.
But
now, do you like that because you lived here and you saw that?
No, because in Europe, a lot of places, it's very common. Yeah. I think it's because it's nice to have, they're very sweet and bitter, right? So when you have anything a little salty and like briny, it kind of breaks that down. It almost gives you like that thirst to have the next sip. Like it balances out really well. I used to do it at the bar. I used to put olives and everybody's like, why do you put olives? That's crazy. And then I stopped because people were just too many questions asked.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's so nice. You eat a couple olives, you drink on a Aperol. It's like,
see, that's the thing. Like, to be honest with you, before I moved to China, I didn't really see Aperol Spritz. I think just the timing was off and it wasn't big in San Francisco and definitely not big in New Mexico. But now it's, you know, you see Aperol Spritz everywhere. It's not my favorite taste, but I do see olives and orange, or I just see orange. I mean, an orange guy.
Both work. Aperol Spritz, fun fact, actually more Campari Spritz, but Spritz in general are pretty big in Brazil.
Yeah.
Like people really like their bitters in Brazil. I think people really drink their Negronis and their Camparis. Like it's a very...
Is it because it's so tropical or is it just...
I don't know necessarily why, but it's very popular everywhere. Like people really like their bitter drinks.
Yeah.
And I think it could be that we drink a lot of sweet things too, so it's kind of a break from that. But I don't know.
So what's the sweet thing in Brazil? I'm gonna say caipirinhas, but that's the easy answer.
Yeah, but also sour and sweet. I think that the bitter is just like a very contrasting flavor, so that's why people find it so interesting. And it's very popular. Like Campari is very popular. More than Aperol, I would say.
I feel like the same thing. I think Campari is more popular than Aperol in its own way.
Not here.
Yeah. But, Campari is, I think they're really smart. Like, if you get a cocktail that, or a brand that has one cocktail associated to it, you've hit a home run. Like, that's what you want, right? Like, Campari's done that with Manhattans. You see a lot of brands that
With Negronis.
Sorry, why did I say Negronis? But you see a lot of these brands that like they hit a home run with one, and fair enough, good play on them. What would you say it would be an underrated cocktail that you'd like to see glown up?
You ask me all these off cuff questions on the go, on the fly here.
I told you this is going to be a fun episode. I'm trying to make Anna do work. She's much cooler than I am.
So. Do you have something in mind for you? Because I can think about it, but I'm not sure.
Okay, for a glow up, I think what needs to come back is Harvey Wallbangers and limoncello.
No. I could pass both of those.
The look of disgust was almost the same as her Fernet
face.
No. Okay, Harvey Wallbangers became popular in the 70s. It's orange juice, Galliano, and vodka.
That's the reason why those Galliano bottles never moved in the back
they
bar.
Never moved again. I'm saying bring it back. Let's make Harvey Wallbangers great again.
How do you make it great?
I think you just fresh orange juice, locally sourced vodkas.
Some lime, maybe.
Good ice.
I do not support this endorsement. I do not want to make Galliano great again.
I don't even work for Galliano. Just... What do you think? What needs a glow up, though, on your side?
I think good tiki drinks, maybe like Mai Tais.
It's so funny that you're talking about Mai Tais. Are you doing any Mai Tais this weekend?
Yeah, we're doing Latin Land and probably going to make a big, big batch of slushy Mai Tais again. I really like tiki drinks. And I think that although there are a lot of like niche bars around the world that do good tiki drinks, when people go to a tiki drink, they expect syrupy, fake juices, crappy alcohol, like kind of garnished up to make it look like there's value. So I think good fresh tiki is always great. Like I got a pina colada. Fuck, make pina colada great again.
Yeah, that, I'm 100% down with that. Let's make pina coladas great again.
Pina coladas with like a really nice coconut cream, ooh, fresh pineapple, like dark rum, some bitters.
You know what I was doing on Tuesday?
I had some lemon and some sugar. Yeah.
Watermelon lemon drops.
I can see that.
Fresh watermelon juice, vodka, lemon juice, Cointreau.
Nice.
Delicious.
Kamikazes, basically.
Basically, but I mean...
Watermelon kamikazes. Being politically correct, it's lemon drops now.
Lemon drops.
So, Logan, what is your obscure spirit you're kind of nerdy about?
Sinar.
Chinar.
Sinar.
Chinar is delicious. It's a...
It's an artichoke liqueur.
Artichoke bitter. It's like similar to Amaro, so same for digestive, right?
I don't have Anna's fantastic accent, so I can't do anything but American in Chinar.
So he says Chinar. It's Chinar, guys. If you see a bottle anywhere, it's...
Is it really called Chinar?
Yes, yeah, Chinar.
I feel like that's a hate crime in a word. I'm not Chinar. Saying that ever.
Yeah, C-Y-N-A-R, and it's in the bottles. It's called Chinar. Yeah, it's delicious.
It's good. So it's an artichoke-based alcohol, and it's... Changes the game.
From all the bitters, from all the amaros, from all those digestives, it's probably my favorite too. Nice. I love Chinar.
Consensus. Like, we've reached consensus.
Yeah. You got me that. You got me some Averna. I'm a happy girl.
I don't like Averna. Too
you don't
sweet.
Like Averna. I prefer Chinar a lot more. I like to do like, there's this cocktail called the Little Italy.
Yeah.
I changed the recipe from the original because the original is similar to an old fashioned. So it's rye whiskey, Chinar and sugar. But I thought that it was just, it just didn't allow for enough Chinar and it got too sweet. So what I do is I do more of a Manhattan. So I do rye, okay, sweet vermouth and Chinar. And some orange bitters, orange twists put on the rocks. It's delicious. So it's like a twist in a Little Italy.
I could remember my first like real bartending gig. I had to make a Manhattan for the bar manager's dad. And at that time, the bar manager was like the coolest person we knew. We all hung out. Like all of our friends were all bartenders there. It was literally like the crew. Like you went with your bar everywhere. And I had to make this Manhattan for his dad. And I had never made a Manhattan before because I'm under 60. So like I made this.
It's very popular now.
Now it's popular. This is 2002, 2003.
Okay.
Nobody was drinking Manhattans except for I was making one. I didn't realize it's almost equal parts whiskey and vermouth.
No.
You could do 1 to 3. You could do 2 to 1. I did a lot more vermouth.
I don't even do 2 to 1. I do 3/4. I do 2 ounces of rye and 3/4 ounce of vermouth. So whatever that scale is.
Yeah. But it has to be, you know, it has to be rye and it has to be red sweet vermouth, right?
Yeah.
I did not do that. And then, like, the bar manager's like, what did you do? My dad only has almost a whole glass of whiskey. And I was like, what's wrong with that? Not knowing that I completely screwed up a Manhattan. But that's how you learn stuff. Like, I think the fun part of learning is, like, when you mess up and you're like, oh, I can make this better now. And I have a muscle memory to do it better. And getting yelled at by your peers doesn't help you, but it makes you a better bartender. Now, what is going to be, in your opinion, Miss Anna, the most overrated spirit?
Oh.
Dude, I'm hitting hit. I'm ooh, like Sean from First We Feast.
Wow. That's a good question. I think that... Okay, I have a hot take.
Hot take it.
Hot take. I don't think it's necessarily the category... But it how bastardized the category is becoming, I think it's gin.
Ooh. So what?
I love gin. It's actually outside of basically if you look top to bottom, I drink tequila, mezcal, and probably gin. Like I go for like light spirits mostly. And then it goes for my bourbons and all that. But I think gins are really good. I think that when people as a group, as a generation, when we realized how easy it was to produce gin, everybody with an idea started making gin.
Yeah.
And I think that it has been bastardized in the sense that people are just like, oh, you just add juniper berries and whatever herbs you want and that's it. And people have been making this really like subpar gins. Like gins are not that great. And the customers just bought into the culture of how cool it is the gins are different. And
that's an extremely hot take, by the way.
Yeah, and then people kind of just want to be shocked. So I have people come to the bar and be like, oh, I know all the gins in the back bar. Do you have anything that I wouldn't know? Do you have anything new? Do you have anything different? I want to try a different gin. I have a friend of mine. He made his own gin. This other guy made a gin in his basement. This other guy made a gin with a friend. And I'm just like, no, I have this gin. Because they're good.
As somebody that works for the most highly award-winning gin in China, High Seas, I will say gin... to make well is very, very tough. But I get what you're saying. It's like the beer guys that make their own beer.
Yeah, there's a lot of good craft beers, but there's also a lot of trash out there. And yeah. It's just because it became so easy to make it. And the same thing for Jane. Like, and I'm not discouraging people, but I think that if I have... Okay. Let's get my favorite gin, definitely Tanqueray Original Classic, London Dry to perfection, basic, affordable.
Let's also just tell our listeners, what does London Dry mean? So, guys, it's a specific category of gins.
So, London Dries have to be made in London. Duh. They also have to have no added sugar.
Yes.
At all. And also, I forgot all the regulations right now, but I think that basically you can add everything. After you add the water to get to the percentage you want, that's it. You can add anything to it, right? London Dry style can't be made anywhere in the world. You just can't call yourself London Dry Gin.
So it's a DOC, basically.
Yeah, but people will call dry gin, or they will even put London Dry Gin style or something along those lines. Like, they just cannot say it's London Dry, right? But that's your classic martini gin, for me, in my opinion. It's just your classic, not classic, it's not necessarily the first gin that was invented. It's just like it's the blank canvas of gin. That's like gin for me, right? And if I get something like a Tanqueray, which is just like cheap, affordable, great, and then I got this craft gin that costs 3 times the price and it's completely unbalanced, it's a bit too herbal, a bit too taste of grass, and just doesn't work so well, and has a premium cost on it, I'm just not impressed. I find it a bit overrated.
So,
not to say that there aren't good craft gins, there are.
There's a ton of them. I mean, I would say, just for the listener as well, dry gin just means it's not sweet. Demi sec means a little bit sweet. You don't see that with gin as much as champagne, which we're gonna have to get into in a second.
Then you get to the gins that are just called gins, that they have all freedom to do whatever they want, right? So you have your for example, Hendrick's would be considered a new Western because they, not only because, I don't know if they add sugar necessarily, but they also don't follow certain rules on how they add the flavor. So the cucumber is, they call it cold distillation, but it's basically they make an essence and then they add the essence of cucumber to it, which gins have to be, I think in London Dry, there are rules about... being distilled together, like either on the net or in the same pot or whatever other styles. But the essence adding is makes it a new Western, which, by the way, Hendrick's delicious. I love it. Don't
Hendrick's
get me wrong.
Fantastic gin, yeah.
I'm down to it. Like, it's not a criticism, but I've also tried a lot of just bad gins lately. Like, I think I tried a lot of, like, people starting the brands and I want to support. I do, but then...
So, I mean...
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, I mean, don't take a... shot of the king if you can't kill him, generally.
Yes.
Now we have to get to the indelicate situation of beers.
Why? What's the indelicate situation?
I'm not a beer drinker, but when I drink beer, it's so I'm not drinking.
I like beer. I drink a lot of beer.
I mean, I feel like beer drinkers and alcohol drinkers, hard liquor drinkers, are a little bit different crowds sometimes.
Yeah, but I, you know what? I'm going to say something kind of funny, too. I think I drink beer like a bartender because I like to drink your cheap lager. I like to drink your Miller High Life with a shot of whiskey on the side. Champagne or beers, yeah. I'm saying I'm not massive into the craft beer world. I'm not massive into IPAs. I'm not massive into, like, I just like finishing a shift, having a cold-ass
that's the best feeling in the world.
Miller High Life and having a shot of bourbon with it and Bob's your uncle. Like, I try my friends' beers. I like to go to beer events. I taste it. I try. I just don't... I drink spirits more than I drink beer in that sense.
I feel like if I'm drinking beer, it's so I could be sober that day and hang out with my friends that are drinking beer. Because if you start getting on one that they're not on, it makes a lot of, as we say in Chinese, mafan.
Yeah, mafan is trouble, stress, annoyance. Yeah.
I was telling Anna before this interview started that I had no shirt on at a bar yesterday, and it's because I was drinking beer.
Oh, so you weren't drinking, that's why.
Yeah, I was planning on not drinking, and it backfired.
No, I'm fine on beer. I keep it chill. I think it's because beer kind of fills you up a little bit, but it's just a different drunk. But
I don't eat if I'm drinking beer. It fills me too much.
To be honest, I think that... Not on purpose, but that happens to me too. When I drink beer, I kind of don't feel hungry. Then I forget about it, and then I become a mess. Yeah.
Yeah, then McDonald's seems really good.
Oh, that's any booze.
But, okay, so now we've covered beer. We've covered some liqueurs. I need to hit the hard-hitting questions now, Anna.
How did this turn into an interview of Anna? I'm being interviewed here, guys. Help me. Please come take me away. He's going to ask for ransom. I don't know what it is.
It's going to be like Labyrinth, and the goblins are going to get you.
No.
No. Just to make content, what kind of whiskey is your favorite whiskey? Are you a peaty lady or not peaty lady?
I am not a Scotch lady.
Okay.
I don't like... when I mean Scotch, I'm opening the umbrella to all... basically, barley, like, whiskeys, like Scotch style. So... Japanese included, like, I appreciate the art. Like, I taste them. Yamazaki, delicious. Hibiki, delicious. I had, luckily for working in a lot of, like, five-star hotels and things like this, I had access to 30-year-old, 40-year-old whiskeys. I had access to a lot of things that I guess most people don't. I get Scotch. I get it. It's just not my flavor profile.
Now, this is just, like, a Balvenie or, like, any Scotch? Like a Big Mac attack?
No. Any Scotch in the sense that I appreciate. There's obviously some that I like more than others. Like, I really like Glenfarclas.
Glenfarclas?
Yes, thank you very much.
We'll get Andrew Cottingham on the podcast.
No, now I need a translation for when I'm going to speak Scottish here.
Yeah, we'll get Cottingham on the podcast.
I like some other Highland Scotches. I like peaty whiskey. I don't like super peaty. I'm not a big Lafroy person, but I like something like a Talisker, which is like a little peaty, like an Isle of Skye. I know Scotch fairly well. It's just not for me.
It's not what you order, yeah.
It's the same of like, I can appreciate a good chocolate cake, but if I had a choice, it wouldn't be chocolate. Like, I just don't like chocolate cake that much.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I mean, I'm trying to get to the real nitty gritty. Are you a Jameson or a Bushmill?
Jameson.
Yeah.
No, but I'm a bourbon.
Yeah,
I like bourbon. I like rye. I like rye even more. Yeah,
I'm not a rye whiskey drinker. It's just not my taste.
I like rye. I like bourbon. I like straight. I prefer bourbon. Like to just drink cocktails. I think rye just kills it.
I feel like rye in a cocktail is much better. Rye in a just rye by itself is not my taste.
I like a good sour mash too. Good sour mash American whiskey. For the ones at home, sour mash is Jack Daniels is not bourbon. It's a Tennessee whiskey, but it's also made in a style called sour mash. And there are other producers, including bourbon producers, that make sour mash. And they just make it, they cannot call it bourbon anymore because it's a different procedure. They, they use a mash that's sour to ignite the other one, la, la, la. But I think the Michter's sour mash.
Ooh, Michter's, yeah.
You got Michter's sour mash and make a whiskey sour with that. It's the most expensive whiskey sour you could probably make it, but it's so good. It's so worth it. And I love the rye to death. I think Michter's rye is...
Respect. I think Michter's rye is fantastic. But also, Jim Beam rye isn't to be slept on.
Yeah, but Michter's rye is... But again, we're comparing Zara with Chanel here. I think that I love Michter's rye. But Michter's bourbon is amazing. Top of the chain, but it's not my favorite. I am a Buffalo Trace girl.
Oh, Buffalo's amazing.
Buffalo Trace. Oh, the whole distillery, like Eagle Rare.
Yeah.
Also love and adore. I like that because bourbon has to be 51% corn.
Yes.
But the other half of the mash can be like very different. And the corn can be higher percentage. Some whiskeys will be 70% corn and all that, right? Buffalo Trace has a high rye content for bourbon. So it has a little bit more of that spiciness, the sharpness. Like it's just... Love those babies.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful expression.
Yeah. So it's like, probably that's my, if I go to whiskey, I go American. And I know everyone, like, I have to deal with a lot of argument by whiskey, working in bars with customers being like, Scotch is far superior than bourbon. And I'm like, okay, why? And the answer is because it's expensive.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, if you take the price tag out, which one do you prefer? So what I do to mess with them is I do blind tasting.
Nice.
And I'll be like, which one is your favorite?
Yeah.
And they will still go for Scotch, but they tend to go to actually cheaper Scotches.
Well, I remember when I used to work for Balvenie. I used to be the brand ambassador for Balvenie in San Francisco. And I used to have a budget every night of $500. And they had a credit card for me. And like I would walk into a bar and I would just be Mr. Balvenie for the night. And when you're tasting people and stuff like that, it's very interesting because people's reactions are always very... You can't tell what people's reactions are. Like, some people might be just be cool. Some people might really like whiskey versus beer. Some people might just be like, this is dog shit, yada, yada, yada. It's very interesting to see the polar extremes that come from this kind of stuff. Because I used to do it as a job. And I'd be like, oh, this... Because I like Balvenie. I think Balvenie is a really well-balanced Scotch whiskey. It's got the same characteristics as Macallan. It's the same company that makes Hendrix. It's made in Dufftown, so it's basically right next to Macallan. Yeah, Balvenie's made in Dufftown.
No, Balvenie makes Monkey Shoulder.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about Monkey Shoulder.
No, I'm saying Hendrix is made by the guys of Buchladie. Same place? I don't know. I will research. But it's the same distillery as Buchladie.
Yeah, but it's the same company. It's William Grant & Sons that does Hendrix.
You're right, yeah. You're right? Actually, no. I'm completely wrong. I messed up. I apologize. Botanist is made by Buchladie. Yes. You're right.
Guys,
you're right. You got me.
Anna's the smartest person in the podcast, and I got her.
He got me, yeah. No,
for
Hendrix.
A company that I worked at for years that I know everything
about. No, I just think strange. Also, Hendrix is much newer than back in the days, I think, right? They didn't even have Hendrix yet, did they?
No, Hendrix is not that old.
Yeah. No, but Hendrix, you're right. It's William Grant & Sons, same as Monkey Shoulder, same as Balvenie and all that. I'm thinking about the Botanist, which is Botanist is made in Scotland as well as a gin. Also, great gin, by the way. Great martinis.
Botanist is a very nice gin.
Actually, I'll say that right up there, especially for martinis, is an incredible gin.
The guys that make Bruichladdich is...
They make Bruichladdich, yeah.
And it's that beautiful teal blue bottle. If you ever see a baby robin's egg, I think is the color.
Yeah, for the Bruichladdich bottle, yeah.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And they have the Octomore, which is a black one, which is so peaty. Too peaty for me.
Yeah. I'm not a big peat person.
Oh, guys, but the people at home, peat is the type of soil that they have in Scotland in certain areas that they use it when they're roasting their barley, basically, and gets this smoky taste to it because peaty just gives that smokiness when it's lit, when it's like, brazen, per se.
Yeah.
So when we say peated scotch is what people call the smoky scotch. So when you have your Lafroy, your...
Lowland scotch.
Any
Ardbeg,
yeah. So they are very smoky, and in the technical term is peated.
So why does this happen? It happens because back in the day, they used to have to use more peat to boil basically the ingredients to make the scotch. So more peatier, the lowland you are. So the higher, like Highland scotch, like we just talked about Macallan, Balvenie, those are Highland scotches. And then you have something like a Talisker, which is more of a peated, not a peated scotch. It's more wheated. So you have a lot. I mean, scotch is very interesting because it goes to the characters of Scotland. Like the islands, Isle of Skye, it's going to be more peaty, more salty, more flavorful. And some people really get that. Some people don't like it.
It's a little saltier, too. Yeah, the Talisker is much saltier. I think it just, the closer to the ocean you are, and the distilleries is more like peaty and more salty, and the closer to England and Highlands you are, the more like classic scotch you get. Yeah.
No, I mean, for me, I would say I like I said, I like a Lowland scotch, but what are your thoughts on liqueurs? What are you going for? Are you a Chambord or are you a Saint-Germain?
I don't have liqueurs in my mind. I don't drink them straight. I find them too sweet. They are. I use them as almost like syrup for cocktails. It's like an alcoholic syrup. Or to make low ABV cocktails are great because you can have all the flavor. So I don't have favorites. I just have what you need in a back bar to make good cocktails, right? So for so many cocktails, you need, Cointreau over... I find Cointreau better over any of the other triple secs. Now, on its own, I think Grand Marnier probably even tastes better if you're just sipping it. But Cointreau is just, because it's 40% alcohol, the sugar doesn't feel that intensely.
Yeah.
And it creates a stronger cocktail with a lot of the triple sec flavor that you want. So I always go for Cointreau. On the elderflower liqueurs, yes, I know it's expensive, but Saint-Germain is just great. It has like the perfect flavor because a lot of the other stuff can taste a little soapy. And then if we're just talking about your run-of-the-mill, just like cocktail ingredients, general liqueurs, I like Giffard a lot. I think the brand does
a
good job.
Do a really good job for what they're doing.
Yeah, I think I'm okay with Bowles, especially if you're in a hurry, but I feel like Bowles is always a little sweeter. So it's a little more artificial, a little more sweet.
Well, I mean, Bowles is coming back. The Bowles company just rebought themselves. So the family actually bought bowls again.
Oh, I did not know. Yeah,
yeah,
you.
So it's a, they're, have a lot they're, of they're the heps. Pushing. They're pushing a lot of new bowls products. But I mean, Anna, it's 40 minutes. I think we have.
We pitter pattered enough.
I didn't think this was pitter patter. I think this was dropping knowledge bombs left and right.
It's with knowledge bombs. All right. I think we should always end with drinks you've been drinking.
Drinks we've been drinking. So what you been drinking, Anna?
I asked you first.
Okay. But I'm a gentleman, so I'm going to always ask a lady. Okay, fine. I'll go first. What have I been drinking? I was drinking, and this is actually really funny, I was drinking a lot of Vesper martinis again because I feel like it's Vesper season.
For summer for you is martini season?
Yeah, I think martini just makes you feel classier. I really do feel like it, you feel classier with a martini on.
For me, I was drinking strawberry margaritas and no shame. I was having...
There should be no shame in that game.
Yeah, it was delicious. And
now, should we do a curveball for our listeners? We had some people, thankfully, that came to see us last time at Feast. We had some fans. Anna, what should we say? What drink should we make for the fans?
Well,
not on the spot or anything.
Come for the slushy.
Yeah, we can slush it up. Because, I mean... We want to see you guys next weekend, or this weekend, I guess, and next weekend at Latinland. And Anna and myself will be producing some of the best tasting cocktails at a festival.
Damn right. Yeah. No question about it.
And guys, thank you so much for listening to us. I hope you guys had a fun listening adventure and learned some new knowledge. We covered some ground. So cheers. Always like and subscribe us. Cheryl's going to show us some Instagram love, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye.
See you guys.